I didn't know what being stuck somewhere would feel like, but my guess was I'd hate it.
And?
He shrugged. And now I am stuck someplace.
And?
She said again. He shrugged again and said nothing. It was warm in the car, warm and comfortable.
Say the words, Reacher, she said. Get it out. You're stuck someplace, and?
And nothing.
Bullshit nothing, and?
He took a deep breath. And I'm having a problem with it. The car went quiet. She nodded like she understood.
Jody doesn't want you to keep moving around, I guess.
Well, would you?
I don't know.
He nodded. Problem is, she does know. She and I grew up the same, always moving, base to base to base, all around the world. A month here, 6 months there. So she lives the life she lives because she went out there and created it for herself, because it's exactly what she wants. She knows it's exactly what she wants because she knows exactly what the alternative is.
She could move around a little. She's a lawyer. She could change jobs from time to time.
He shook his head. Doesn't work that way. It's about career. She'll make partner sometime real soon, the way she's going, and then she'll probably work at the same firm her whole life. And anyway, I'm not talking about a couple of years here, 3 years there, buy a house, sell a house. I'm talking about if I wake up in Oregon tomorrow and I feel like going to Oklahoma or Texas or somewhere, I just go, with no idea about where I'm going the next day.
A wanderer.
It's important to me.
How important, though?
He shrugged. I don't know exactly.
How are you going to find out?
Problem is, I am finding out.
So what are you going to do?
He was quiet for another mile. I don't know, he said.
You might get used to it.
I might, he said, but I might not. It feels awful deep in my blood. Like right now, middle of the night, heading down the road someplace I've never been. I feel real good. I just can't explain how good I feel. She smiled.
Maybe it's the company.
He smiled back. Maybe it is.
So will you tell me something else?
Like what?
Why are we wrong about this guy's motive?
He shook his head. Wait until we see what we find in Portland.
What are we going to find in Portland?
My guess is a carton full of paint cans with absolutely no clue as to where they came from or who sent them there.
So?
So then we put two and two together and make four. The way you guys have got it, you ain't making four. You're making some big, inexplicable number that's a long, long way from four. Reacher racked his seat back a little more and dozed through most of Harper's final hour at the wheel. The second-to-last leg of the trip took them up the northern flank of Mount Hood on Route 35. The Buick changed down to third gear to cope with the gradient, and the jerk from the transmission woke him again. He watched through the windshield as the road looped around behind the peak. Then Harper found Route 26 and swung west for the final approach, down the mountainside toward the city of Portland. The nighttime view was spectacular. There was broken cloud high in the sky, and a bright moon and starlight. There was snow piled in the gullies. The world was like a jagged sculpture in gray steel glowing below them.
I can see the attraction in wandering, Harper said. Sight like this.
Reacher nodded. It's a big, big planet. They passed through a sleeping town called Rhododendron and saw a sign pointing ahead to Rita Semeca's village, 5 miles farther down the slope. When they got there, it was nearly 3 in the morning. There was a gas station and a general store on the through road. Both of them were closed up tight. There was a cross street running north into the lower slope of the mountain. Harper nosed up it. The cross street had cross streets of its own. Semeca's was the third of them. It ran east up the slope. Her house was easy to spot. It was the only one on the street with lights in the windows, and the only one with a bureau sedan parked outside. Harper stopped behind the sedan and turned off her lights, and the motor died with a little shudder and silence enveloped them. The rear window of the bureau car was misted with breath, and there was a single head, silhouetted in it. The head moved and the sedan door opened, and a young man in a dark suit stepped out. Reacher and Harper stretched and unclipped their belts and opened their doors. Slid out and stood in the chill air with their breath clouding around them. She's in there, safe and sound, the local guy said to them. I was told to wait out here for you. Harper nodded. And then what? Then I stay out here, the guy said. You do all the talking. I'm security detail until the local cops take over 8 in the morning. The cops gonna cover 24 hours a day? Reacher asked. The guy shook his head miserably. 12, he said. I do the nights. Reacher nodded. Good enough, he thought. The house was a big square clapboard structure, built side on to the street so the front faced the view to the west. There was a generous front porch with gingerbread railings. The slope of the street made room for a garage under the house at the front. The garage door faced sideways under the end of the porch. There was a short driveway. Then the land sloped upward so that the rest of the basement would be dug into the hillside. The lot was small, surrounded with tall hurricane fencing, marching up the rise. The yard was cultivated, with flowers everywhere, the color taken out of them by the silver moonlight.
She awake? Harper asked.
The local guy nodded. She's in there waiting for you. Chapter 17. A walkway came off the driveway on the left, and looped through the dark around some rockery plantings to a set of wide wooden steps in the center of the front porch. Harper skipped up them, but Reacher's weight made them creak in the night silence, and before the echo of the sound came back from the hills, the front door was open, and Rita Semeca was standing there watching them. She had one hand on the inside doorknob, and a blank look on her face.
"Hello, Reacher," she said.
"Semeca," he said back. "How are you?" She used her free hand to push her hair off her brow.
"Reasonable," she said, "considering it's 3 o'clock in the morning and the FBI has only just gotten around to telling me I'm on some kind of hit list with 10 of my sisters, 4 of whom are already dead."
"Your tax dollars at work," Reacher said.
"So why the hell are you hanging with them?"
He shrugged. "Circumstances didn't leave me a whole lot of choice." She gazed at him, deciding. It was cold on the porch. The night dew was beating on the painted boards. There was a thin, low fog in the air. Behind Semeca's shoulder, the lights inside her house burned warm and yellow. She looked at him a moment longer.
"Circumstances?" she repeated.
He nodded. "Didn't leave me a whole lot of choice." She nodded back.
"Well, whatever. It's kind of good to see you, I guess."
"Good to see you, too." She was a tall woman, shorter than Harper, but than most women were. She was muscular, not the compact way Alison Lamar had been, but the lean, marathon runner kind of way. She was dressed in clean jeans and a shapeless sweater, substantial shoes on her feet. She had medium-length brown hair, worn in long bangs above bright brown eyes. She had heavy frown lines all around her mouth. It was nearly 4 years since he had last seen her, and she looked the whole 4 years older.
"This is Special Agent Lisa Harper," he said.
Semeca nodded once, warily. Reacher watched her eyes. A male agent, she'd have thrown him off the porch.
"Hi,"
Harper said.
"Well, come on in, I guess," Semeca said.
She still had hold of the doorknob. She was standing on the threshold, leaning forward, unwilling to step out. Harper stepped in and Reacher filed after her. The door closed behind them. They were in the hallway of a decent little house, newly painted, nicely furnished. Very clean, obsessively tidy. It looked like a home. Warm and cozy, a personal space. There were wool rugs on the floor, polished antique furniture and gleaming mahogany, paintings on the walls, vases of flowers everywhere.
"Chrysanthemums," Semeca said. "I grow them myself. You like them?"
Reacher nodded. "I like them," he said, "although I couldn't spell them."
"Gardening's my new hobby," Semeca said. "I've gotten into it in a big way."
Then she pointed toward a front parlor.
"And music," she said. "Come see."
The room had quiet wallpaper and a polished wood floor.
There was a grand piano in the back corner, shiny black lacquer, a German name inlaid in brass. A big stool was placed in front of it, handsome buttoned leather in black. The lid of the piano was up, and there was music on the stand above the keyboard, a dense mass of black notes on heavy cream paper.
"Want to hear something?" she asked.
"Sure," Reacher said. She slid between the keyboard and the stool and sat down, laid her hands on the keys and paused for a second. And then, a mournful minor key chord filled the room. It was a warm sound, and low, and she modulated it into the start of a funeral march. "Got anything more cheerful?" Reacher asked.
"I don't feel cheerful," she said.
But she changed it anyway, into the start of the Moonlight Sonata.
"Beethoven," she said.
The silvery arpeggios filled the air. She had her foot on the damper and the sound was dulled and quiet. Reacher gazed out of the window at the plantings, gray in the moonlight. There was an ocean 90 miles to the west, vast and silent.
"That's better," he said.
She played it through to the end of the first movement, apparently from memory, because the music open on the stand was labeled Chopin. She kept her hands on the keys until the last chord died away to silence.
"Nice," Reacher said. "So you're doing okay?"
She turned away from the keyboard and looked him in the eye.
"You mean, have I recovered from being gang-raped by 3 guys I was supposed to trust with my life?"
Reacher nodded. "Something like that, I guess."
"I thought I'd recovered," she said, "as well as I ever expected to. But now I hear some maniac is fixing to kill me for complaining about it. That's taken the edge off it a little bit, you know."
"We'll get him,"
Harper said in the silence.
Semeca just looked at her. "So can we see the new washing machine in the basement?" Reacher asked.
"It's not a washing machine, though, is it?"
Semeca asked.
"Not that anybody tells me anything."
"It's probably paint," Reacher said. "In cans. Camouflage green, army issue."
"What for?"
"The guy kills you, dumps you in your bathtub, and pours it over you."
"Why?"
Reacher shrugged. "Good question. There's a whole bunch of pointy heads working on that right now." Semeca nodded and turned to Harper.
"You a pointy head?"
"No, ma'am. I'm just an agent,"
Harper said.
"You ever been raped?"
Harper shook her head.
"No, ma'am, I haven't."
Semeca nodded again.
"Well, don't be," she said. "That's my advice."
There was silence.
"It changes your life," Semeca said. "It changed mine, that's for damn sure. Gardening and music, that's all I've got now."
"Good hobbies,"
Harper said.
"Stay-at-home hobbies," Semeca said back. "I'm either in this room or within sight of my front door. I don't get out much, and I don't like meeting people. So take my advice. Don't let it happen to you."
Harper nodded.
"I'll try not to."
"Basement,"
Semeca said. She led the way out of the parlor to a door tucked under the stairs. It was an old door made up of pine planks painted many times. There was a narrow staircase behind it, leading down toward cold air smelling faintly of gasoline and tire rubber.
"We have to go through the garage," Semeca said.
There was a new car filling the space, a long, low Chrysler sedan painted gold. They walked single file along its flank, and Semeca opened a door in the garage wall. The musty smell of a basement bloomed out at them. Semeca pulled a cord, and a hot yellow light came on.
"There you are," she said.
The basement was warm from a furnace. It was a large square space with wide storage racks built on every wall. Fiberglass insulation showed between the ceiling joists. There were heating pipes snaking up through the floorboards. There was a carton standing alone in the middle of the floor. It was at an angle to the walls, untidy against the neat shelving surrounding it. It was the same carton. Same size, same brown board, same black printing, same picture, same manufacturer's name. It was taped shut with shiny brown tape, and it looked brand new.
"Got a knife?" Reacher asked.
Semeca nodded toward a work area. There was a pegboard screwed to the wall, and it was filled with tools hanging in neat rows.
Reacher took a linoleum knife off a peg, carefully, because in his experience the peg usually came out with the tool, but not this one. He saw that each peg was secured to the board with a neat little plastic device. He came back to the box and slit the tape, reversed the knife, and used the handle to ease the flaps upward. He saw 5 metal circles glowing yellow, 5 paint can lids reflecting the overhead light. He poked the knife handle under one of the wire hoops and lifted one of the cans up to eye level, rotated it in the light. It was a plain metal can, unadorned except for a small white label printed with a long number and the words, Camo Green.
We've seen a few of those in our time, Sameka said. Right, Reacher?
He nodded. A few. He lowered the can back into the box, pushed the flaps down, and walked over and hung the knife back where it had been, glanced across at Sameka. When did this come? He asked.
I don't remember, she said.
Roughly?
I don't know, she said. Maybe a couple months ago.
A couple of months, Harper said. Sameka nodded.
I guess I don't really remember.
You didn't order it, right? Reacher said. Sameka shook her head.
I already have one. It's over there.
She pointed. There was a laundry area in the corner, washer, dryer, sink. A vacuumed rug in the angle of the corner. White plastic baskets and detergent bottles lined up precisely on a countertop.
Thing like this you'd remember, Reacher said.
Wouldn't you?
I assumed it's for my roommate, I guess, she said.
You have a roommate?
Had. She moved out a couple of weeks ago.
And you figured this is hers?
Made sense to me, Sameka said. She's setting up housekeeping on her own. She needs a washing machine, right?
But you didn't ask her?
Why should I? I figured it's not for me. Who else could it be for?
So why did she leave it here?
Because it's heavy. Maybe she's getting help to move it. It's only been a couple of weeks.
She leave anything else behind?
Sameka shook her head. This is the last thing.
Reacher circled the carton, saw the square shape where the packing documents had been torn away. She took the paperwork off, he said. Sameka nodded again.
She would, I guess. She'd need to keep her affairs straight.
They stood in silence, 3 people surrounding a tall cardboard carton, vivid yellow light, jagged dark shadows.
I'm tired, Sameka said. Are we through? I want you guys out of here.
One last thing, Reacher said.
What?
Tell Agent Harper what you did in the service.
Why? What's that got to do with anything?
I just want her to know. Sameka shrugged, puzzled.
I was in armaments proving.
Tell her what that was.
We tested new weapons incoming from the manufacturer.
And?
If they were up to spec, we passed them on to the quartermasters.
Silence. Harper glanced at Reacher, equally puzzled. Okay, he said. Now we're out of here. Sameka led the way through the door to the garage, pulled the cord and killed the light, led them past her car and up the narrow staircase, out into the foyer. She crossed the floor and checked the spy hole in the front door, opened it up. The air outside was cold and damp.
Goodbye, Reacher, she said. It was nice to see you again.
Then she turned to Harper.
You should trust him, she said. I still do, you know. Which is one hell of a recommendation, believe me.
The front door closed behind them as they walked down the path. They heard the sound of the lock turning from 20 feet away. The local agent watched them get into their car. It was still warm inside. Harper started the motor and put the blower on high to keep it that way.
She had a roommate, she said.
Reacher nodded.
So your theory is wrong. Looked like she lived alone, but she didn't. We're back to square one.
Square two, maybe. It's still a subcategory. Has to be. Nobody targets 91 women. It's insane.
As opposed to what? Harper said. Putting dead women in a tub full of paint?
Reacher nodded again. So what now? He said.
Back to Quantico, she said.
It took nearly 9 hours. They drove to Portland, took a turboprop to SeaTac, Continental to Newark, United to D.C., and a bureau driver met them and drove them south into Virginia. Reacher slept most of the way, and the parts when he was awake were just a blur of fatigue. He struggled into alertness as they wound through Marine territory. The FBI guard on the gate reissued his visitor's tag. The driver parked at the main doors. Harper led the way inside, and they took the elevator 4 floors underground to the seminar room with the shiny walls and the fake windows and the photographs of Lorraine Stanley pinned to the blackboard. The television was playing silently, reruns of The Day on the Hill. Blake and Poulton and Lamar were at the table with drifts of paper in front of them. Blake and Poulton looked busy and harassed. Lamar was as white as the paper in front of her, her eyes deep in her head and jumping with strain.
"Let me guess," Blake said. "Semeca's box came a couple of months ago, and she was kind of vague about why, and there was no paperwork on it."
"She figured it was for her roommate," Harper said. "She didn't live alone, so the list of 11 doesn't mean anything."
But Blake shook his head.
"No, it means what it always meant," he said. 11 women who look like they live alone to somebody studying the paperwork. We checked with all the others on the phone. 80 calls. Told them we were customer services people with a parcel company. Took us hours. But none of them knew anything about unexpected cartons. So there are 80 women out of the loop and 11 in it. So Reacher's theory still holds. The roommate surprised him. They'll surprise the guy.
Reacher glanced at him, gratified and a little surprised.
"Hey, credit where it's due," Blake said.
Lamar nodded and moved and wrote a note on the end of a lengthy list. "I'm sorry for your loss," Reacher said to her.
"Maybe it could have been avoided," she said. "You know, if you'd cooperated like this from the start."
There was silence.
"So we've got 7 out of 7, Blake said. "No paperwork, vague women." "We've got one other roommate situation," Poulton said. "Then 3 of them have been getting regular missed deliveries, and they've gotten slow about sorting them out. The other 2 were just plain vague."
"Semeca was pretty vague for sure," Harper said.
"She was traumatized," Reacher said. "She's doing well to function at all." Lamar nodded, a small sympathetic motion of her head.
"Whatever. She's not leading us anywhere, right?" she said.
"What about the delivery companies?" Reacher asked. "You chasing them?"
"We don't know who they were," Poulton said. "The paperwork is missing. 7 cartons out of 7.
"There aren't too many possibilities," Reacher said.
"Aren't there?" Poulton said back. "UPS, FedEx, DHL, Airborne Express, the damn United States Postal Service, whoever, plus any number of local subcontractors."
"Try them all," Reacher said.
Poulton shrugged. "And ask them what? Out of all the 10 zillion packages you delivered in the last 2 months, can you remember the one we're interested in?"
"You have to try," Reacher said. "Start with Spokane. Remote address like that, middle of nowhere, the driver might recall it." Blake leaned forward and nodded.
"Okay, we'll try it up there. But only there. Gets impossible otherwise."
"Why are the women so vague?" Harper asked.
"Complex reasons," Lamar answered. "Like Reacher said, they're traumatized, all of them. At least to some extent. A large package coming into their private territory unasked? It's an invasion of sorts. The mind blocks it out. It's what I would expect to see in cases like these."
Her voice was low and strained. Her bony hands were laid on the table in front of her.
"I think it's weird," Harper said.
Lamar shook her head patiently, like a teacher.
"No, it's what I would expect," she said again. "Don't look at it from your own perspective. These women were assaulted, figuratively, literally, both. That does things to a person."
"And they're all worried now," Reacher said. "Guarding them meant telling them. Certainly Semeca looked pretty shaken, and she should be. She's pretty isolated out there. If I was the guy, I'd be looking at her next. I'm sure she's capable of arriving at the same conclusion."
"We need to catch this guy," Lamar said.
Blake nodded.
"Not gonna be easy now. Obviously, we'll keep round-the-clock security on the 7 who got the packages, but he'll spot that from a mile away, so we won't catch him at a scene."
"He'll disappear for a while," Lamar said, "until we take the security off again."
"How long are we keeping the security on?" Harper asked.
There was silence.
3 weeks, Blake said. "Any longer than that, it gets crazy."
Harper stared at him.
"Has to be a limit," he said. "What do you want here? Round-the-clock guards the rest of their damn lives?"
Silence again. Poulton butted his papers into a pile.
So we've got 3 weeks to find the guy, he said.
Blake nodded and laid his hands on the table.
Plan is, we spell each other 24 hours a day, 3 weeks, starting now. One of us sleeps while the others work. Julia, you get the first rest period, 12 hours, starting now.
I don't want it.
Blake looked awkward.
Well, want it or not, you got it.
She shook her head.
No. I need to stay on top of this. Let Poulton go first.
No arguments, Julia. We need to get organized.
But I'm fine. I need to work, and I couldn't sleep now anyway.
12 hours, Julia,
Blake said.
You're entitled to time off anyway. Compassionate leave of absence, twice over.
I won't go, she said back.
You will.
I can't, she said. I need to be involved right now.
She sat there, implacable, resolution in her face. Blake sighed and looked away.
Right now you can't be involved, he said.
Why not?
Blake looked straight at her.
Because they just flew your sister's body in for the autopsy, and you can't be involved in that. I can't let you.
She tried to answer. Her mouth opened and closed twice, but no sound came out. Then she blinked once and looked away.
So, 12 hours,
Blake said.
She stared down at the table.
Will I get the data?
She asked quietly.
Blake nodded.
Yes, I'm afraid you'll have to,
he answered.
Chapter 18. The local bureau team in Spokane had worked hard through the night and gotten good cooperation from a construction business and a crane hire operation and a trucking crew and an air cargo operator. The construction workers tore Allison Lamar's bathroom apart and disconnected the plumbing. Bureau crime scene specialists wrapped the whole tub in heavy plastic, while the builders took out the window and removed the end wall down to floor level. The crane crew fixed canvas slings under the wrapped tub and brought their hook in through the hole in the end of the building and eased the heavy load out into the night. It swung through the chill air and dropped slowly down to a wooden crate lashed to a flatbed truck idling on the road. The truckers pumped expanding foam into the crate to cushion the cargo and nailed the lid down tight and drove straight to the airport in Spokane. The crate was loaded into a waiting plane and flown direct to Andrews Air Force Base, where a helicopter collected it and took it on down to Quantico. Then it was offloaded by a forklift and set down gently in a laboratory loading bay and left waiting there for an hour while the Bureau's forensic experts figured out exactly how to proceed.
At this point, the cause of death is all I want, Blake said.
He was sitting on one side of a long table in the pathology conference room, 3 buildings and 5 floors away from the behavioral science facility. Harper was sitting next to him, and then Poulton next to her, and then Reacher at the end of the row. Opposite them was Quantico's senior pathologist, a doctor called Stavely, which was a name Reacher thought he recognized from somewhere. Clearly the guy had some kind of a famous reputation. Everybody was treating him with deference. He was a large, red-faced man, oddly cheerful. His hands were big and red and looked clumsy, although presumably they weren't. Next to him was his chief technician, a quiet, thin man who looked preoccupied.
"We read the stuff from your other cases," Stavely said and stopped.
"Meaning?"
Blake asked.
"Meaning? I'm not exactly filled with optimism," Stavely said. "New Hampshire is a little remote from the action, I agree, but they see plenty down in Florida and California. I suspect if there was anything to find, you'd know about it by now. Good people down there."
"Better people up here," Blake said.
Stavely smiled.
"Flattery will get you anywhere, right?" "It's not flattery."
Stavely was still smiling.
"If there's nothing to find, what can we do?"
"Gotta be something," Blake said. "He made a mistake this time with the box."
"So?"
"So? Maybe he made more than one mistake, left something you'll find."
Stavely thought about it. "Well, don't hold your breath is all I'm saying." Then he stood up abruptly and knitted his thick fingers together and flexed his hands, turned to his technician.
"So, are we ready?"
The thin guy nodded. "We're assuming the paint will be dried hard on the top surface, maybe an inch, inch and a half. If we cut it away from the tub enamel, all around, we
should be able to slide a body bag in and scoop her out.
Good,
Stavely said. Keep as much paint around her as you can. I don't want her disturbed. The technician hurried out and Stavely followed him, evidently assuming the other four would file out behind him, which they did, with Reacher last in line. The pathology lab was no different from the others Reacher had seen. It was a large, low space, brightly lit by an illuminated ceiling. The walls and the floor were white tile. In the middle of the room was a large examination table sculpted from gleaming steel. The table had a drain canal pressed into the center. The drain was plumbed straight into a steel pipe running down through the floor. The table was surrounded by a cluster of wheeled carts loaded with tools. Hoses hung from the ceiling. There were cameras on stands and scales and extractor hoods. There was a low hum of ventilation and a strong smell of disinfectant. The air was still and cold.
Gowns and gloves, Stavely said.
He pointed to a steel cupboard filled with folded nylon gowns and boxes of disposable latex gloves. Harper handed them out.
Probably won't need masks, Stavely said. My guess is the paint will be the worst thing we smell.
They smelled it as soon as the gurney came in through the door. The technician was pushing it and the body bag lay on it, bloated and slick and smeared with green. Paint seeped from the closure and ran down the steel legs to the wheels and left parallel tracks across the white tile. The technician walked between the tracks. The gurney rattled and the bag rolled and wobbled like a giant balloon filled with oil. The technician's arms were smeared with paint to his shoulders.
Take her to X-ray first, Stavely said.
The guy steered the gurney in a new direction and headed for a closed room off the side of the lab. Reacher stepped ahead and pulled the door for him. It felt like it weighed a ton.
Lined with lead, Stavely said. We really zapped them in there. Big, big doses, so we can see everything we want to see. Not like we have to worry about their long-term health, is it?
The technician was gone for a moment, and then he stepped back into the lab and eased the heavy door closed behind him. There was a distant, powerful hum, which lasted a second and then stopped. He went back and came out pushing the gurney again. It was still making tracks across the tile. He stopped it alongside the examination table.
Roll her off, Stavely said. I want her face down.
The technician stepped beside him and leaned across the table and grasped the nearer edge of the bag with both hands and lifted it half off the gurney, half onto the table. Then he walked around to the other side and took the other edge and flipped it up and over. The bag flopped zipper side down and the mass inside it sucked and rolled and wobbled and settled. Paint oozed out onto the polished steel. Stavely looked at it and beyond to the floor, which was all crisscrossed with green tracks.
Overshoes, people, he said. It'll get everywhere.
They stepped away, and Harper found pairs of plastic footwear in a locker and handed them out. Reacher slipped his on and stepped back and watched the paint. It seeped out through the zipper, like a thick, slow tide.
Get the film, Stavely said.
The technician ducked back to the X-ray room and came out with large gray squares of film which mapped Allison Lamar's body. He handed them to Stavely. Stavely fanned through them and held them up against the light from the ceiling.
Instant, he said. Like Polaroid. The benefits of scientific progress.
He shuffled them like a dealer and separated one of them and held it up. Ducked away to a light box on the wall and hit the switch and held the film against the light with his big fingers splayed.
Look at that, he said.
It was a photograph of the midsection, from just below the sternum to just above the pubic area. Reacher saw the outlines of ghostly gray bones, ribs, spine, pelvis, with a forearm and a hand lying across them at an angle. And another shape, dense and so bright, it shone pure white. Metal, slim and pointed, about as long as the hand.
A tool of some sort, Stavely said. The other shouldn't have anything like that, Fulton said. Doc, we need to see it right away, Blake said. It's important.
Stavely shook his head.
It's underneath her body right now because she's upside down. We'll get there, but it won't be real soon. How long?
Long as it takes, Stavely said. This is going to be messy as hell. He clipped the gray photographs in sequence on the light box. Then he walked the length of the ghostly display and studied them.
Her skeleton is relatively undamaged, he said.
He pointed to the second panel.
Left wrist was cracked and healed probably 10 years ago.
She was into sports, Reacher said. Her sister told us.
Stavely nodded.
So we'll check the collarbone.
He moved left and studied the first panel. It showed the skull and the neck and the shoulders. The collarbones gleamed and swooped down toward the sternum.
Small crack, Stavely said, pointing. It's what I'd expect. An athlete with a cracked wrist will usually have a cracked collarbone, too. They fall off their bike or their rollerblades or whatever, throw out their arm to break their fall, end up breaking their bones instead.
But no fresh injuries, Blake asked.
Stavely shook his head.
These are 10 years old, maybe more. She wasn't killed by blunt trauma, if that's what you mean.
He hit the switch and the light behind the X-rays went out. He turned back to the examination table and knitted his fingers again, and his knuckles clicked in the silence.
Okay, he said. Let's go to work.
He pulled a hose from a reel mounted on the ceiling and turned a small faucet built into its nozzle. There was a hissing sound, and a stream of clear liquid started running. A heavy, slow liquid with a sharp, strong smell.
Acetone, Stavely said. Gotta clear this damn paint.
He used the acetone sluice on the body bag and on the steel table. The technician used handfuls of kitchen towel, wiping the bag and pushing the thick liquid into the drain. The chemical stink was overpowering.
Ventilator, Stavely said.
The technician ducked away and twisted a switch behind him, and the fans in the ceiling changed up from a hum to a louder roar. Stavely held the nozzle closer, and the bag began to turn from wet green to wet black. Then he held the hose low down on the table and set up a swirling rinse under the bag straight into the drain.
Okay, scissors, he said.
The technician took scissors from a cart and snipped a corner of the bag. Green paint flooded out. The acetone swirl caught it, and it eddied sluggishly to the drain. It kept on coming, 2 minutes, 3, 5. The bag settled and drooped as it emptied. The room went quieter under the roar of the fan and the hiss of the hose.
Okay, the fun starts here, Stavely said.
He handed the hose to the technician and used a scalpel from the cart to slit the bag lengthwise from end to end. He made sideways cuts top and bottom and peeled the rubber back slowly. It lifted and sucked away from skin. He folded it back in 2 long flaps. Allison Lamar's body was revealed, lying face down, slimy and slick with paint. Stavely used the scalpel and slit the rubber around the feet, up alongside the legs, around the contours of her hips, upper flanks, close to her elbows, around her shoulders and head. He pulled away the strips of rubber until the bag was gone, all except for the front surface, which was trapped between the crust of paint and the steel of the table. The crust of paint was top down to the table because she was upside down. Its underside was bubbled and jellified. It looked like the surface of a distant alien planet. Stavely started rinsing its edges where it was stuck to her skin.
Won't that damage her? Blake asked.
Stavely shook his head.
It's the same stuff as nail polish remover.
The skin turned greenish-white where the paint washed off. Stavely used his gloved fingertips to peel the crust away. The strength in his hands moved the body. It lifted and fell slackly. He pushed the hose underneath her, probing for stubborn adhesions. The technician stood next to him and lifted her legs. Stavely reached under them and cut the crust and the rubber together, peeling it away up to her thighs. The acetone ran continuously, rinsing the green stream into the drain. Stavely moved up to the head, placed the hose against the nape of her neck, and watched as the chemical flooded her hair. Her hair was a nightmare. It was matted and crusted with paint. It had floated up around her face like a stiff, tangled cage.
I'm going to have to cut it, he said.
Blake nodded, somber.
I guess so, he said.
She had nice hair, Harper said.
Her voice was quiet under the noise from the fan. She half turned and backed off a step. Her shoulder touched Reacher's chest. She left it there a second longer than she needed to. Stavely took a fresh scalpel from the cart and traced through the hair as close to the paint crust as he could get. He slid a powerful arm under the shoulders and lifted. The head came free, leaving hair matted into the crust like mangrove roots tangled into a swamp. He cut through the crust and the rubber and pulled another section free.
I hope you catch this guy, he said.
That's the plan,
Blake said back, still somber. Roll her over, Stavely said. She moved easily. The acetone mixed with the slick paint was like a lubricant against the dished steel of the table. She slid face up and lay there, ghastly under the lights. Her skin was greenish-white and puckered, stained and blotched with paint. Her eyes were open, the lids rimmed with green. She wore the last remaining square of the body bag stuck to her skin from her breasts to her thighs, like an old-fashioned bathing suit protecting her modesty. Stavely probed with his hand and found the metal implement under the rubber. He cut through the bag and wormed his fingers inside and pulled the object out in a grotesque parody of surgery.
A screwdriver, he said.
The technician washed it in an acetone bath and held it up. It was a quality tool with a heavy plastic handle and a handsome chromed steel shaft with a crisp blade.
Matches the others, Reacher said. From her kitchen drawer, remember?
She's got scratches on her face, Stavely said suddenly.
He was using the hose, washing her face. Her left cheek had 4 parallel incisions running down from the eye to the jaw.
Did she have these before?
Blake asked.
No,
Harper and Reacher said together.
So what's that about?
Blake said.
Was she right-handed? Stavely asked. I don't know, Poulton said.
Harper nodded.
I think so.
Reacher closed his eyes and trawled back to her kitchen, watched her pouring coffee from the jug.
Right-handed, he said.
I agree,
Stavely said.
He was examining her arms and hands.
Her right hand is larger than the left. The arm is heavier.
Blake was leaning over, looking at the damaged face.
So?
I think they're self-inflicted, Stavely said.
Are you sure?
Stavely was circling the head of the table, looking for the best light. The wounds were swelled by the paint, raw and open, green where they should have been red.
I can't be sure, he said. You know that. But probability suggests it. If the guy did them, what are the chances he would have put them in the only place she could have put them herself?
He made her do it, Reacher said.
How?
Blake asked. I don't know how. But he makes them do a hell of a lot. I think he makes them put the paint in the tub themselves.
Why?
The screwdriver? It's to get the lids off with. The scratches were an afterthought. If he'd been thinking about the scratches, he'd have made her get a knife from the kitchen instead of the screwdriver, or as well as the screwdriver. Blake stared at the wall.
Where are the cans right now?
Materials analysis, Poulton said. Right here, they're examining them.
So take that screwdriver over there, see if there are any marks that match.
The technician put the screwdriver in a clear plastic evidence bag, and Poulton shrugged off his gown and kicked off his overshoes and hurried out of the room.
But why? Blake said. Why make her scratch herself like that?
Anger, Reacher said. Punishment, humiliation. I always wondered why he wasn't more violent.
These wounds are very shallow, Stavely said. I guess they bled a little, but they didn't hurt much. The depth is absolutely consistent all the way down each of them, so she wasn't flinching.
Maybe ritual, Blake said.
Symbolic somehow. 4 parallel lines mean anything?
Reacher shook his head. Not to me.
How did he kill her?
Blake asked.
That's what we need to know.
Maybe he stabbed her with the screwdriver?
Harper said.
No sign of it, Stavely said. No puncture wounds visible any place that would kill a person.
He had the final section of the body bag peeled back and was washing paint away from her midsection, probing with his gloved fingers under the acetone jet. The technician lifted the rubber square away, and then she lay naked under the lights, collapsed and limp and utterly lifeless. Reacher stared at her and remembered the bright, vivacious woman who had smiled with her eyes and radiated energy like a tiny sun. Is it possible you can kill somebody, and a pathologist can't tell how? He asked. Stavely shook his head.
Not this pathologist, he said.
He shut off the acetone stream and let the hose retract into its reel on the ceiling. Stepped back and turned the ventilation fan back to normal. The room turned quiet again. The body lay on the table as clean as it was ever going to get. The pores and folds of skin were stained green, and the skin itself was lumpy and white like something that lives at the bottom of the sea. The hair was spiky with residue, roughly hacked around the scalp, framing the dead face. "Fundamentally, two ways to kill a person," Stavely said. "Either you stop the heart, or you stop the flow of oxygen to the brain. But to do either thing without leaving a mark is a hell of a trick." "How would you stop the heart?" Blake asked. "Short of firing a bullet through it," Stavely said. "Air embolism would be the best way. A big bubble of air, injected straight into the bloodstream. Blood circulates surprisingly fast, and an air bubble hits the inside of the heart like a stone, like a tiny internal bullet. The shock is usually fatal. That's why nurses hold up the hypodermic and squirt a little fluid out and flick it with their nail, to be sure there's no air in the mix. You'd see the hypodermic hole, right?" "Maybe, maybe not. And definitely not on a corpse like this. The skin is ruined by the paint. But you'd see the internal damage to the heart. I'll check, of course, when I open her up, but I'm not optimistic. They didn't find anything like that on the other three, and we're assuming a consistent M.O. here, right?" Blake nodded. "What about oxygen to the brain?" "Suffocation, in layman's terms," Stavely said. "It can be done without leaving much evidence. Classic thing would be an old person, wasted and weak, gets a pillow held over the face. Pretty much impossible to prove. But this isn't an old person. She's young and strong." Reacher nodded. He had suffocated a man once, way back in his long and checkered career. He had needed all of his considerable strength to hold the guy's face down on a mattress while he bucked and thrashed and died. "She'd have fought like crazy," he said. "Yes, I think she would," Stavely said. "And look at her. Look at her musculature. She wouldn't have been a pushover." Reacher looked away instead. The room was silent and cold. The awful green paint was everywhere. "I think she was alive," he said, "when she went in the tub."
"Reasoning?"
Stavely asked. "There was no mess," Reacher said. "None at all. The bathroom was immaculate. What was she, 120, 125? Hell of a dead weight to heave into the tub without making some kind of a mess."
"Maybe he put the paint in afterward," Blake said. "On top of her."
Reacher shook his head. "It would have floated her up, surely. It looks like she slipped right in there, like you get into a bath. You know, you point your toe, you get under the water."
"We'd need to experiment," Stavely said. "But I think I agree she died in the tub. The first three, there was no evidence they were touched at all. No bruising, no abrasions, no nothing. No post-mortem damage either. Moving a corpse usually damages the ligaments in the joints because there's no muscle tension there to protect them. At this point, my guess is they did whatever they did, strictly under their own power."
"Except kill themselves," Harper said. Stavely nodded. "Suicide in bathtubs is pretty much limited to drowning while drunk or drugged, or opening your veins into warm water. Obviously, this isn't suicide."
"And they weren't drowned," Blake said.
Stavely nodded again.
"The first three weren't. No fluid of any kind in the lungs. We'll know about this one as soon as she's opened up, but I would bet against it." "So how the hell did he do it?" Blake said.
Stavely stared down at the body, something like compassion in his face.
"Right now I have no idea," he said. "Give me a couple of hours, maybe three. I might find something." "No idea at all?"
"Well, I had a theory," Stavely said. "Based on what I read about the other three, problem is, now I think the theory is absurd."
"What theory?"
Stavely shook his head.
"Later, okay? And you need to leave now. I'm gonna cut her up, and I don't want you here for that. She needs privacy, time like this."
Chapter 19. They left their gowns and overshoes in a tangle by the door and turned left and right through walkways and corridors to the pathology building's front exit. They took the long way around through the parking lots to the main building, as if brisk motion through chill fall air would rid them of the stink of paint and death. They rode the elevator four floors underground in silence, walked through the narrow corridor and spilled into the seminar room, and found Julia Lamar sitting alone at the table, looking up at the silent television screen.
"You're supposed to be out of here," Blake said to her.
"Any conclusions?" she asked quietly. "From Stavely?"
Blake shook his head.
"Later. You should have gone home."
She shrugged.
"I told you, I can't go home. I need to be on top of this."
"But you're exhausted."
"You saying I'm not effective?"
Blake sighed.
Julia, give me a break. I gotta organize. You collapse with exhaustion, you're no good to me.
Not going to happen.
It was an order, you realize that?
Lamar waved a hand like a gesture of refusal. Harper stared at her.
It was an order, Blake said again.
And I ignored it, Lamar said. So what are you gonna do? We need to work. We've got 3 weeks to catch this guy. That's not a lot of time.
Reacher shook his head. That's plenty of time. Harper turned her stare on him. If we talk about his motive, right now, he said. There was silence. Lamar stiffened in her seat.
I think his motive is clear, she said.
There was ice in her voice. Reacher turned to face her, softening his expression, trying to defer to the fact that her family had been wiped out in the space of 2 days.
It isn't to me, he said.
Lamar turned to Blake, appealing.
We can't start arguing this all over again, she said. Not now.
We have to, Reacher said.
We've done this work already, she snapped.
Relax, people, Blake called.
Just relax.
We've got 3 weeks, and we're not going to waste any of it arguing.
You're going to waste all of it if you keep on like this, Reacher said. There was suddenly tension in the air. Lamar stared down at the table. Blake was silent, then he nodded.
You got 3 minutes, Reacher, he said. Tell us what's on your mind.
You're wrong about his motive, Reacher said. That's what's on my mind. It's keeping you away from looking in the right places.
We've done this work already, Lamar said again.
Well, we need to do it over, Reacher said gently. Because we won't find the guy if we're looking in the wrong places. That stands to reason, right?
Do we need this? Lamar said.
2 minutes and 30 seconds, Blake said. Give us what you've got, Reacher.
Reacher took a breath. This is a very smart guy, right? Very, very smart. Smart in a very particular way. He's committed 4 homicides, bizarre, elaborate scenarios, and he hasn't left the slightest shred of evidence behind. He's only made 1 mistake by leaving 1 box open, and that was a fairly trivial mistake, because it's not getting us anywhere. So we've got a guy who successfully handled 1,000 decisions, 1,000 details, under urgent and stressful conditions. He's killed 4 women, and so far we don't even know how.
So? Blake said. What's your point?
His intelligence, Reacher said. It's a specific type. It's practical, efficient, real world. He's got his feet on the ground. He's a planner, and he's pragmatic. He's a problem solver. He's intensely rational. He deals with reality.
So?
Blake said again. So let me ask you a question. You got a problem with black people?
What?
Just answer the question.
No, I don't.
Good or bad as anybody, right?
Sure, good or bad.
What about women? Good or bad as anybody, right? Blake nodded.
Sure.
So what if some guy is saying to you that black people are no good, or women are no good?
I'd say he's wrong.
You'd say he's wrong. And you'd know he's wrong because deep down, you know what the truth of the matter is. Blake nodded again.
Sure, so?
So that's my experience, too. Racists are fundamentally wrong. Sexists, too. No room for argument about it. Fundamentally, it's a completely irrational position to hold, so think about it. Any guy who gets in a big tantrum about this harassment issue is a guy who's wrong. Any guy who blames the victims is very wrong. And any guy who goes around looking for revenge against the victims is very wrong. He's got a screw loose. His brain doesn't function right. He's not rational. He's not dealing with reality. He can't be. Deep down, he's some kind of an idiot.
So?
But our guy isn't an idiot. We just agreed he's very smart. Not eccentric smart, not lunatic smart, but real-world smart. Rational and pragmatic and practical. He's dealing with reality. We just agreed on that.
So?
So he's not motivated by anger at these women. He can't be. It's not possible. You can't be real-world smart and real-world dumb all at the same time. You can't be rational and irrational. You can't deal with reality and simultaneously not deal with it. There was silence again.
We know what his motive is, Lamar said. What else could it be? The target group is too exact for it to be anything else.
Reacher shook his head. Like it or not, the way you're describing his motive, you're calling him deranged. But a deranged guy couldn't commit these crimes. Lamar clamped her teeth. Reacher heard them click and grind. He watched her. She shook her head. Her thin hair moved with it, stiff, like it was full of lacquer.
So what's his real motive, smart guy?
She asked, her voice low and quiet.
I don't know, Reacher said. You don't know? You better be kidding. You question my expertise and you don't know?
It'll be something simple. It always is, right? 99 times out of 100, the simple thing is the correct thing. Maybe doesn't work like that for you guys down here, but that's how it works out there in the real world. Nobody said a word. Then the door opened, and Poulton walked into the silence, small and sandy, with a faint smile hanging there under his mustache. The smile disappeared as soon as the atmosphere hit him. He sat down quietly next to Lamar and pulled a stack of paper in front of him defensively.
What's going on? He asked.
Blake nodded toward Reacher.
Smart guy here is challenging Julia's reading of the motive.
So, what's wrong about the motive?
Smart guy is about to tell us. You're just in time for the expert seminar.
What about the screwdriver? Reacher asked. Any conclusions? Poulton's smile came back.
Either that screwdriver, or an identical one, was used to lever the lids off. The marks match perfectly. But what's all this about the motive?
Reacher took a breath and looked around the faces opposite him. Blake, hostile. Lamar, white and tense. Harper, curious. Poulton, blank.
Okay, smart guy, we're listening, Blake said.
It'll be something simple, Reacher said again. Something simple and obvious and common. And lucrative enough to be worth protecting.
He's protecting something.
Reacher nodded. That's my guess. I think maybe he's eliminating witnesses to something.
Witnesses to what?
Some kind of a racket, I suppose.
What kind of a racket?
Reacher shrugged. Something big, something systematic, I guess. There was silence.
Inside the army?
Lamar asked. Obviously, Reacher said. Blake nodded.
Okay, he said. A big systematic racket inside the army. What is it?
I don't know, Reacher said. There was silence again. Then Lamar buried her face in her hands. Her shoulders started moving. She started rocking back and forward in her chair. Reacher stared at her. She was sobbing, like her heart was breaking. He realized it a moment later than he should have, because she was doing it absolutely silently.
Julia? Blake called. You okay?
She took her hands away from her face, gestured helplessly with her hands, yes, no, wait. Her face was white and contorted and anguished. Her eyes were closed. The room was silent, just the rasp of her breathing.
I'm sorry, she gasped. Don't be sorry, Blake said. It's the stress.
She shook her head wildly.
No, I made a terrible mistake. Because I think Reacher's right. He's gotta be. So I was wrong all along. I screwed up. I missed it. I should have seen it before. Don't worry about it now, Blake said.
She lifted her head and stared at him.
Don't worry about it? Don't you see all the time we wasted? Doesn't matter, Blake said limply.
She stared on at him.
Of course it matters. Don't you see, my sister died because I wasted all this time. It's my fault. I killed her because I was wrong.
Silence again. Blake stared at her helplessly.
You need to take time out, he said.
She shook her head, wiped her tears.
No, no, I need to work. I already wasted too much time, so now I need to think. I need to play catch up. You should go home. Take a couple of days.
Reacher watched her. She was collapsed in her chair like she had taken a savage beating. Her face was blotched red and white. Her breathing was shallow and her eyes were blank and vacant.
You need rest, Blake said. She stirred and shook her head.